Good morning, America. Welcome to Legal Anatomy of Current Events. I'm Gary Bell, along with Brad Pollack. Our law firm is Bell and Pollack. We have offices in Denver, Colorado, and Steamboat Springs, Colorado. And we are bringing this show to you to give you the legal breakdown of current events in our country. We call it anatomizing your mind, right? And what do we mean by anatomizing your mind? What we mean is we take the current events in our country and we give you the legal breakdown of those current events. It's not a partisan show and it's not a political show, but we give you the breakdown. We give you the legal story inside the story so that you can make up your own mind about the facts. And we try to give it to a detailed legal breakdown. And guess what? This week we're talking about the movie Rust, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and the prosecution. And now we had a trial that happened, and we had previous charges that happened, charges in 23, then new charges in 24, a trial in 24. And now we have a conviction. And we're going to give you the breakdown of that conviction and how it all happened and what both sides have the right to do. And we got another trial coming up in June of 24 on Alec Baldwin. So here we go.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Legal Anatomy of Current Events, preparing for launch. Legal Anatomy of Current Events, launch sequence started. T-minus 10, internal power green to go. LES ready for ignition. T-minus 9, 8, 7, we have ignition. 5, 4, commit for launch green. 3, 2, 1, we have liftoff. Legal Anatomy of Current Events, all for you. Now, on the air.
All right, Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, Legal Anatomy of Current Events, the only show of its kind. We give you the legal breakdown of the legal story inside the story, the legal details, and we've heard feedback from people, and we appreciate your feedback, that they like the legal details, they like the breakdown. For instance, you hear about an indictment. Let's just take Trump, for example. That's not our subject today, but Trump has been indicted. So you hear that. You know that. But what does the indictment mean? What's the statute say? What do the prosecution have to prove? What does the defense have to say about it? What are the defenses to? What are Trump's defenses? That's just one example. Today we're talking about the movie Rust in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where we all know the cinematographer was shot and killed on the set, right? And the bullet went through another shoulder as well. But the cinematographer was shot and killed Hutchins, and so she died on the scene. That's tragic. It was horrible, right? With a gun that was supposed to be taken care of, and a gun that had a live bullet in it, obviously. So what were the facts? What's the background of this situation? Now, we did a show on this before, and we're calling this a sidebar because we bring you up to date on our sidebars. We've done it before. So you can go back and listen to our original show on Rust, and that was before there was a trial. And, Brad, now we've had the first trial, and the first trial resulted in a guilty finding by the jury against the armorer on the set, and that's subject to jail sentence. That's subject to felony treatment. And let's start there with our analysis.
Well, the analysis is that and this may be actually good for other people who are going to be coming for a jury. It could be bad, but the analysis is that the person, the armorer, Ms. Gutierrez Reed, who was responsible for checking the guns and loading the guns, the practice and the procedure is that the armorer is supposed to set up, is supposed to check the guns, and is supposed to make sure that those guns are not loaded when they're being handed to people. Now, you know, when you start dealing with a loaded gun, you're going to hear me say this many times. When you start dealing with a gun, period, I don't care if you think it's loaded or not, the first real responsibility I think you have is to look to see if the gun's loaded. And if the gun's loaded, you'll know it. If the gun's not loaded, you don't know it. I can't imagine ever being on a any kind of place or movie proceeding or anything else, no matter what you want to call it, where they're going to tell me, they're going to hand me a gun, and I'm going to depend on somebody else having checked to see if it was loaded or wasn't loaded. So I would probably mess up the recording that they'd want to do, because if they handed me a gun, I'd have to make them stop the recording because I'd want to look to see if the gun was loaded, and I'd want to check every chamber, because when you have a revolver, you're talking about every chamber. So in this particular case, we know somebody was, to one extent or another, criminally negligent. We don't know if it's more than one. We know one because one got charged and was found guilty by a jury.
And was convicted.
And right. So we know that. But we know that there had to be players who were criminally negligent because they didn't follow the standards of the industry when determining whether or not this gun was loaded. And when they didn't do it, and they had the responsibility to do it, they ended up killing somebody. Now, you know, we talk about the main person, Alec Baldwin. Do we say he did or didn't follow the standards? That's going to be what the case is going to be all about.
Right. You know, and Brad, so there was a background here. There was live ammunition on the set. There was statements and proof that some of the people on the set were out shooting guns at beer cans, pop cans in the desert out by Santa Fe, and then the gun would make its way back to the set. And that usually doesn't happen in a movie set, okay? You shouldn't have live ammunition around a movie set where you're going to have guns. And they did have live ammunition, and it made its way into the gun, and it made its way to kill Miss Hutchins, which is very sad and tragic. So, but let's start with, we've got a set of interesting circumstances around the set, Brad, where they're shooting live guns at beer cans, etc. We've got probably loose procedures, but let's start with the New Mexico statutes. Because they're talking about involuntary manslaughter, all right? So in New Mexico, and I'm going to have Brad explain to you in a minute what a lesser included offense is, because that's real telling about prosecutors. But let's start with the statute in New Mexico. There's basically two ways to prove involuntary manslaughter. Two ways. There's the harder way, which is more serious crime, more serious penalties, and there's the easier way, which is still serious but less serious than the harder way. Okay, that's kind of baby talk. Let's talk legal talk. So, the harder way for involuntary manslaughter is to prove that somebody had a willful disregard for the safety of others. A willful disregard for the safety of others. That means they were reckless, they were acting in willful conduct, they engaged in willful conduct, intentional, willful, reckless conduct. And I believe that's what Ms. Hannah Gutierrez was convicted of. There's the other statute, which is a little bit less, and it's not willful. It's an interesting statute. It's a criminal statute because it defaults back down to a lesser standard, and the lesser standard is negligence. In other words, what would a reasonable person do under the circumstances? What would a reasonable person do under Alec Baldwin's circumstances? What would a reasonable person do under Hannah Gutierrez Reed's circumstances? So I want to teach you one more time, and then Brad's going to teach you the lesser included offense strategy, okay, from prosecutors and defense lawyers. But first of all, two basic statutes in New Mexico on involuntary manslaughter. The more serious one with more serious penalties is if you can prove they were reckless and there was a willful disregard for the safety of others, then you're going to get that verdict on that count. But if you can't prove that, then what they try to prove is that the person, Alec Baldwin or Hannah Gutierrez Reed, was negligent, meaning they didn't do what a reasonable person would do. You see, that's a different standard. It's different if it's reckless and willful versus the lower standard of what a reasonable person would do. Okay, so Brad, now Alec Baldwin's going to go to trial in June, and they've got those two pending against him. Why do prosecutors have the more serious charge and the lesser charge? And it's, and you know, the lingo is called a lesser included offense.
Well, it's pretty simple in this case. I'm not so sure the prosecutors believe they can prove the greater charge, and they've got the lesser charge because they want to hold him responsible for this person's death and another person's injuries, and they want to do it in some form or another. They're going to take their shot at the better charge and at the greater charge, and if they can get it done, great. But if they can't get it done, they want to say, well, we may not have proved the necessary mens rea or element, mental culpability element, that is necessary for our greater charge against Mr. Baldwin, but we certainly have proved that he was at least negligent. And by saying we certainly approve that he was at least negligent, you say then we should have the lesser charge based on his negligent conduct. Now, when you go over what happened with Baldwin and what he did, the question is, where's the negligence or where's the wrong act that we want to call either intentional or negligent?
Either reckless and willful or something a reasonable person would not do.
Yes. And we're going, okay, he picked up the gun he was given the gun, and he was told it was a cold gun. And for those in the movie lingo, cold gun means it's not loaded.
Right.
Okay, so the question is, under the normal standards, is it all right for him to have taken the gun and believed it was a cold gun? And the answer is probably yes. And the question is, what's the standard? What's the basic standards? What's the practice that's used when an actor is handed a gun and he's told it's a gold gun? Should he be checking it anyway? And that's a question that hasn't been answered, or we don't know if the DA's office is going to argue that, look, even if you get it and you're told it's a gold gun, you should check it. Then he took the gun and he pulled back the hammer.
Right.
And when he pulled it back, he then aimed it at the camera. Something that they say should not be done and is not the normal practice. But his statement is he was specifically told to do that by the director who was on the set. And they wanted to get, quote, gun angles or whatever. And because they wanted to get the angles, they said, please point it towards the camera. Now, you explain to me, Gary, and I'm not trying to say somebody's guilty or not guilty, because that's still be done by a jury. But you explain to me why that can't be done without the hammer being back.
Right, and so we got to talk about the gun, because everybody this day and age is used to like a clip, a 9mm Glock, a Smith & Wesson, a German-made gun that has a clip and there's no hammer. But this was an old-fashioned replica of the, because it's an old-time Western. It was a replica that had a hammer. You pull the hammer back, and you're just a breath or half a breath away from pulling that trigger and that hammer going down and firing. And igniting with the firing pin, so you're just a hair away when you have the hammer back. You could do that maneuver, because Brad, as we understood it on the set, what he was doing, he was going to have to do a cross draw, not just draw it from his right side, but the gun would be on his left side and do a cross draw across his body and then point it. And he said, or it was reported that he said, now I guess I'm supposed to do it like this. I'm supposed to do it like this, and he pulls the cross draw across, points it. But points it at the camera, and that's where Miss Hutchins was standing, and the other gentleman got the bullet after Miss Hutchins got it in the shoulder. So there's that issue, Brad. And so let's talk about the theories of law, just on that issue right there. Would you think, you're listening to this podcast, would you think that's reckless? You think that's willful? Disregard for the safety of others? That's the tougher standard of involuntary manslaughter in New Mexico. Or would you think that's something a reasonable person would not do? That's the lesser standard. Brad, let's talk about that a second.
Well, and once again, is there a reason the hammer has to be pulled back? Can you do the angles? Can you do the gun being aimed at the camera? Can you be done? Because when you're aiming at the camera, you're aiming at a person, because the person's behind that camera. And so when you're doing that, when you're aiming it that way, is there a reason is there a reason you have to have your finger on the trigger? And they say they have the necessary video to show Alec Baldwin had his finger on the trigger. Is there a reason the hammer had to be pulled back? Because they say the hammer was pulled back. And is there a practice within the movie making industry that you pull back the trigger, or that you pull the trigger? because or you pull back the hammer or you pull the trigger, or you know, because if those don't have to be done, then why was Alec Baldwin doing them? And if those don't have to be done, why would he ever have done it? Now, you know, I've seen movies. You know, all you got to do is go see the shootout at OK Corral, or you got to go see some other movies where they show the bullet leaving the chamber and the gun, and they show it, somebody pulling the trigger, and they show bullets, you know, what's happening with bullets, and they show the guns being held in with the hammer being pulled back. But this was practice. This wasn't where they were doing a real shoot to try and get that. So the question is why, you know, before we even get to, and I know we're going to get to it later, the fact that, you know, there's an expert who says the trigger was pulled in Alec Baldwin and says he never pulled the trigger. Before we even get to that, why was this hammer pulled back? No, okay, you got a cold gun, and it really wasn't a cold gun, and the people who messed that up are responsible. The armorer and the director who were working on it are responsible.
And David Hall was the safety coordinator, not the director, but he's the one that pleaded guilty.
I'm sorry,
and
then safety coordinator.
And then Hannah Gutierrez-Reed was found guilty. So.
Yeah, and David Hall was right to plead because, you know, he didn't require the bear or the gun to be to the chambers, every chamber to be checked. He didn't require that inspect it to make sure. And Gutierrez didn't either. And Gutierrez didn't even spin the gun. And so, you know, you were at a situation where you have that being, I have no problem with those convictions.
Okay, but let's go back to the standards, Brad, because I want everybody to be clear on the standards. We'll fit right into what you're saying there, okay? Spinning the chamber. It's not like a Glock. It's not like a thing that has a clip, a gun that has a clip. You don't spin that. You put the clip in the gun. There's one in the barrel in the chamber. But this is one that you spin. So the standards are either for involuntary manslaughter in New Mexico, number one, door number one, they're going to have to prove that he did it, Alec Baldwin did it with willful disregard for the safety of others, intentionally, recklessly, versus the other one, the lesser included offense, which is negligence, which means Alec Baldwin did something other than what a reasonable person would do. That's what a negligence standard is. What would a reasonable person would do? Think about driving down the road, and you go across the yellow line, right, on an uphill climb. A reasonable person would not do that. So that would be negligence. So either number one, they're going to prove he had a willful disregard for the safety of others, recklessly, or he was negligent. He did something a reasonable person would not do. Now let's go back to your inspection, right? Let's go back to that. Here's a cold gun, Alec. It's cold. Take it. But your point, Brad, is so well taken. Why was the hammer pulled back? Who pulled the hammer back? Right?
I mean, you know, David Hall is quoted as saying that Baldwin had no reason to know the gun was loaded. So, you know, maybe Baldwin has the right, and maybe a jury would say because he had no reason to know the gun was loaded, and because his standards with respect to gun safety is different than a lot of people, maybe they say then, you know, pulling back pulling it back is and having your finger on the trigger means nothing because you believe you have an empty gun.
Okay, that's a great point. You take Alec Baldwin's side for a second on that point. I'll take the prosecution's side, okay? You're saying that Alec Baldwin, your argument would be he's not guilty of anything because he was told it was a cold gun. You take the argument, and then I'll do the prosecution.
Well, exactly that. He was told it was the cold gun. And therefore, anything he did with that gun, from having no reason to believe it was loaded and being told it's a cold gun, which in essence he's being told it's not loaded, and he's being told that by Gutierrez and Hall, and by understanding that they're supposed to do the check, there's nothing he could do with that gun after he gets it and he's told it's cold, and he has every reason to believe it's not loaded. There's nothing he can do with that gun that would lead to any kind of culpability for him. I don't care if it's aiming the gun. I don't care if it's aiming and shooting the gun. I don't care if it's pulling back the chamber.
Hammer?
The hammer. I don't care if it's pulling the trigger. I don't care what it is. There's nothing he can do that would cause him to be having any kind of culpability because he believes he's got something like a toy gun. That's what he believes he's got. Now, you know, we can go the next step. You can try and get around that, but because you got to go the next step where, you know, he's told to do this stuff. He's told to aim the gun at the camera. And that's his boss there telling him to aim the gun, and they supposedly have taken the necessary safety measures to make sure that it's a safe act to take.
Okay, and the prosecution, I'm the prosecution now. The prosecution argument would be, that's all fine and dandy. You say that there's nothing he did wrong, but he pulled back the hammer when it wasn't necessary. A reasonable person wouldn't pull a hammer back on a gun when it's not necessary because it might lead to an accidental firing. Yes, he was told, but he took actions that were inconsistent with being a reasonable person. Pulling a hammer back on a on a Colt 45 is not reasonable. Pointing it at the camera when you're not even filming the scene is not reasonable. That's reckless. You know there's a person back there. You know you got a gun in your hand. You know the hammer's back, and you know you're pointing it at a person, and it hasn't been tested, and you're not even in the scene yet, and you're trying to practice a cross draw. And so that's not what a reasonable person would do. It's intentional. He intentionally pulled the hammer back. He intentionally aimed it at the person. He intentionally pulled the trigger, and the gun went off.
A reasonable person in his position would have every reason to believe that gun was not loaded, and therefore pulling back the hammer or not pulling back the hammer or pulling on the trigger or not pulling on the trigger would mean nothing. And a reasonable person would have that. You're right. A reasonable person not believing or not knowing for sure that the gun is not loaded may have a problem, but he had every reason to believe, and he was told that gun was not loaded by the people he's supposed to believe in and trust and are in that very position to make sure it's not loaded.
But ladies and gentlemen, let's take Mr. Pollock's point. He said he had every reason to believe it, but in the movie industry there's protocol. And one of the protocols is if you're going to point a gun at a crew, they've got to be behind a shield. And he knew there was no shield. He knew it was a dry run. He knew it was a practice run. So this man stood up willfully, knowingly, intentionally pulled the hammer back, willfully, knowingly pointed the gun at the camera where he knew the crew was, knew there was no shield, pulled the trigger, which he denied, and now he says yes, and now he says no. He denied it. And then they had an expert that proved that this gun would not fire without pulling the trigger. And so, therefore, all those were intentional, willful acts of which he knew were intentional and willful.
And why would he, at least they haven't put it together in anything I've read, why would he have any reasonable suspicion to even believe there is live ammo on that set? Now, you know, he's got no reason to believe there's live ammo on that set. So how would a live ammo get into that gun? He's been told it's a cold gun, so he has every reason to believe there's no live ammo in the gun. He's been told to aim the gun at the camera so they can get the right angles, which, you know, in today's day and age in movies, that's exactly what you do, is you try and get the reality of what's happened with respect to the gun and what's happened with respect to the bullet coming out and spinning its way towards somebody. Why would he have any reason to believe any of that or to even think that? And wouldn't a reasonable person be able to say, I can depend on my armor, I can depend on everybody else on that set, I can depend on what they've told me, I can depend on the fact that I pulled the hammer back. Now, you know, I've got some questions when I watch it as far as whether or not he pulled the trigger or not. You know, I know there's a gun expert who says, oh, you had to pull the trigger, and he says, I didn't pull the trigger. I don't know if this was the first time that gun was ever in his hands. But anybody who has shot guns, especially revolvers, and old-time revolvers like that know that it doesn't take much pressure on the trigger to cause the bullet to come out.
Well, that's the old-fashioned saying. I'm not going to be surprised if you come up with it in your idiom at the end of the day, at the end of the show, that there's a hair trigger. But I'll just use it right now. There was a hair trigger, so we'll just get that idiom out of the way. And by the way, that was my idiom that I used for you, but I want to counter your argument.
I'm the prosecution. My idiom is not – it's a serious one on this one. This is somebody who died here.
Your Honor, I'm not getting my time in court. Your Honor, Mr. Pollack has had the defense. I'm not getting my time. I want my time. Order in the court. Okay. Here's what I'm going to say to you. You say he doesn't know this. How do you know there's live ammo? So the facts that we don't know yet, we don't know what I'm about to tell you. But I think if they're discovered this way, this is what the prosecution is going to say. So what I'm going to say from now on this part, or this part right now, is going to assume this can be proved in court. The argument would go like this. Mr. Baldwin knew that there were two prior discharges of live ammunition on this set before this one. He knew that because he was around. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what the story is. He knew that 6 to 8 members of the staff and the set crew walked off the crew before lunch and left because they were disturbed about not safety, but pay, hours, etc. He knew that they were out during lunch shooting live ammunition at beer cans or soda pop cans or whatever. He knew there was live ammunition in or around the movie set. All right, and there were no call sheets. There was no shield for the crew. Therefore, all these things add up, and it was intentional. Now, I want to say for this podcast, I don't know those facts I just recited to be true. I think they're going to come out in discovery, but if they were true, that would be the argument.
This is not my idiom, and my idiom is very serious.
Yes.
But I think you might be shooting in the dark here, to be honest. Yeah. And so I think that we have to think about it. You know, and the reason I will have
now we've got a hair trigger and shooting in the dark.
Yes, I don't have a hair trigger if you're going to shoot in the dark. But I'm a very serious idiot because this is where somebody lost their life, and this is a situation where somebody could lose their freedom. Now we've had other shows where people lose their freedom and lose their lives, but not as directly as we're dealing here, and a lot of this focuses and centers around the gun. And you can bet that before that trial happens, this July I think it is,
June or July, can't remember.
June or July that Alec Baldwin's defense team is going to spend a lot of time with that gun, and their expert is going to spend a lot of time with that gun to find out if in fact it could have gone off. On a hair trigger, if it could have gone off without much pressure. And I'm not so sure Alec Baldwin would be paying attention to how much pressure he's even putting on the trigger, again, because there's no reason for him to even recklessly or negligently believe that there's a bullet in that gun. There was nothing that told us that Alec Baldwin knew about the fact that the guns, and we don't even know if this was one of the guns, but the fact that the crew took a bunch of the prop guns and went out shooting cans that morning.
Brad, you make a great point, because a lot of this case and the results of the case is going to depend on, from your argument and my argument, is going to depend on what Alec Baldwin knew was happening on the set prior. Did Alec Baldwin know that previous live rounds were fired on the set? Did he know that there was all this dispute and shooting at lunch? Did he know there was a potential of live ammunition being around the movie set? Did he know that the crew was out shooting at beer cans with live bullets? Did he know that there might be a possibility live bullets would be intermingled with, commingled with, or present on the site? So that discovery right there, I think, is going to be critical to either destroy your argument or destroy my argument for the prosecution. I think
I forget who it is, but Gary, we have an example of a gun going off or something in an actor in a different movie actually walking off the set.
Nicolas Cage. He walked off.
Gun went off. He walked off the set. He said, I'm not dealing with this at all. You know, Alec Baldwin, we do know that there were two prior incidents where there was a lack of safety on the set.
But did he know?
But did Alec Baldwin know about it? We don't know. Did Alec Baldwin know they were shooting cans in the morning? We don't know. Did Alec Baldwin know that whether or not that gun was one of the guns being used? We don't know.
No, we don't.
We don't know if it was used. And then we get down to the question of whether or not he should have known, and or can you rely on, and should you be able to reasonably rely on what your safety people are telling you?
I tell you what I would do if I were the defense. In this little role play we were playing, I wasn't the defense, but I know what I'd do. I'd fly in and pay for and fly in three or four or five movie stars, including James Bond, and I'd put them on the stand, and I'd say, when you were filmed, if you were handed a gun that says cold gun, what would you do with it? If you thought it was cold gun with no ammunition, Mr. Bond 007, what would you do with it? Mr. Nicolas Cage, what would you do with it? Right? I'd put them on the stand, and if they all said I would rely on them as a cold gun, I'm no further reason for me to check. I can't check. I'm trying to worry about the scene, the shoot, my lines. I'm not here to kill anybody. I'm relying on those people, and four or five of my cohorts in the movie industry just said it, and I'd bring in a director, a movie director from Metro and Golden Mayer or Paramount Studios and have them do the same thing. And so can this actor rely on the fact that they said cold gun? Can they rely on the fact that David Hall should have checked the chamber? Can they rely on the fact that Hannah Gutierrez should have checked the chamber and spun the chamber? This is an old-fashioned Colt 45 revolver.
Now is that...
Can they rely on that?
Is that Daniel Craig you're going to bring in,
yeah,
or Daniel, Sean Connery, no, or Roger Moore, or Pierce Brosnan, or which one of the four?
Which 007 am I going for?
You're probably going to interview each one of those James Bonds and find out what they would say.
Exactly.
And then figure out if you want to put them on the stand.
Exactly.
But, you know, those are the things that are make the case tough both ways.
Both ways.
And make the case one. And, you know, now I'm blending over to some other stuff and probably shouldn't be doing it. But those are the cases where when you hear a result, you can't judge the jury on the result they reached in any case because you didn't hear all the evidence. And we're talking about all this stuff of what if and what would you do and how would you do it. And you're looking going, man, like I said, I'm going to take it outside, but yet somebody spilled a bunch of McDonald's coffee on their leg. And we're going to be going, oh, that's ridiculous. The jury did what they did. But we don't hear the evidence. And this case is a good example of what ifs. And there's a lot of what ifs. And what comes up in trial is going to be there. And there's going to be a lot of refuted what ifs. Because you've got Alec Baldwin saying, I didn't pull that trigger. And you've got an expert saying that trigger that hammer can't go down unless you pulled it. And then, you know, you start talking about, well, how much pressure does it take to make the hammer go down and what's going on? And I don't know Alec Baldwin. I have no idea how good a shot he is. But this bullet and this gun, you know, we're aiming at a camera, and there's no shield up, so maybe that's where Alec Baldwin's going to go wrong right there, not having a shield.
Maybe.
Although, why do you need a shield to point an empty gun at a camera?
Well, it's because it's a safety measure.
Right. And maybe it's a normal practice that has to be carried out. But probably if he was trying to shoot those people, he would have never been able to hit them.
Probably not.
He probably would have hit the wall behind him. And this wouldn't happen. Is it a pure accident? But accidents that result in deaths due to the negligent conduct of a person end up being crimes. And they are crimes. And that could be a problem that's faced. And, you know, I trust that Alec Baldwin's got a lot of lawyers looking at it.
I hope so. And maybe even listen to our podcast here. But I got to tell you something. It's like drunk driving. I mean, the drunk driver could say, yeah, I crossed the center line and I killed somebody head-on collision, but I didn't intend to kill him. I didn't intend to do it. I didn't mean to do it. Well, you know, but you intended to get drunk. You intended to get in the car. You intended to turn on the ignition. You intended to go down the road. And so the natural consequences are what they are in that particular example. But, Brad, I want to cover double jeopardy because I think a lot of people would be thinking about this. All these people were charged initially. They were charged initially. They were charged, I think, in February of 23 or January of 23, and then the charges were dropped.
Yeah,
I think in February of 23, and now they came back up against Hannah Gutierrez Reed, and she was convicted. And now they're coming back up against Alec Baldwin. So why, Brad, when the charges were there in January and February of 23 and dropped by the DA, how can they bring them back up? Isn't that double jeopardy?
Well, double jeopardy doesn't say you can't be charged twice for the same crime. It says you can't be tried twice for the same crime. And tried twice for the same crime requires that you have to swear in a jury, or you have to call the first witness if there is no jury. Now, once you swear in that jury, double jeopardy attaches.
Exactly.
And if you change the manner in which, or if you stop the case there and say, I want to start over, you don't get to start over.
You don't get to start over. You're done.
Or if there's no jury, the minute you call that first witness, now you're, as a DA, you're at double jeopardy time, so you better be able to complete your case.
So in a jury trial, when the judge says, the jury stand up, please, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, raise your right hand, you solemnly swear, blah, blah, listen to the evidence, etc., that's when double jeopardy attaches. And in a trial to the court with no jury, when the first witness takes the stand, say, raise your hand, I, repeat after me, solemnly swear and affirm, tell the truth, that's when double jeopardy attaches. And if you want a little teaser, everybody, you want a teaser from Legal Anatomy today? Okay. We're going to morph over for a second. All those charges pending against Donald Trump, double jeopardy rules are the same. So there's no double jeopardy. Let's take his classified documents case. Both sides are talking about the judge. Double jeopardy doesn't attach until the jury's sworn in. But what if the jury's sworn in Donald Trump's case and the judge declares a mistrial?
Well, the first question I'm going to ask you, though, before you do that, is the mistrial as a result of Donald Trump's conduct, or is it the result of the DA's conduct?
You are one brilliant lawyer, and I can't believe I even said that. Oh, I can't believe I said it.
And we're going to record that a million times. We're going to hear that throughout the office.
We really are. Okay, everybody, listen to Legal Anatomy of Current Events. I'm Gary Bell, along with Brad Pollack. Our law firm is Bell & Pollack. We're from Colorado. We have offices in Denver and Steamboat Springs, beautiful Steamboat Springs, Colorado. And we bring this show to you to anatomize your mind. And what does that mean? We give you the legal breakdown, right? We gave you the legal breakdown today of the Rust matter, the Rust trial, the Alec Baldwin trial coming up in this summer in 2024. And if you ever want to get in touch with us, you can contact us at info@legalanatomy.net. That's info@legalanatomy.net. Okay, it's time for our show for our American idiom from Brad. And so, Brad, what you got today for American idiom?
Plain and simple on this one. It's always assume that a gun is loaded, even if you think it is unloaded. And that's an idiom. That's a practice. That's a belief. That's what you're always supposed to go by. If that would have been done here, there would be a person alive with her children and her spouse. I don't want to cloud it up with any other idioms or anything else. It's just always assumed that a gun is loaded, even if you think it is unloaded.
And I don't have a quote for today. That's a great idiom. I don't have a quote, but what I do have is a question for you to think about. If you're in the military and you've got a gun, handgun on you, and in certain circumstances you should, you got a handgun on you, is there going to be a bullet in the chamber or no bullet in the chamber? Well, you have it on your waist. And then I'm going to ask you, if you're a police officer and you got a handgun on you, on your belt, is there going to be a bullet in the chamber or no bullet in the chamber? All right, you can contact us at info@legalanatomy.net. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, we anatomize your mind. And this is Legal Anatomy of Current Events. We will see you next week.